You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
What is up, Goat Flippers? Thanks for checking out the best hardcore and metal podcast in all of the land. That's right, it's Lamb Goat's The Van Flip Podcast, and I am your host, Lurk. And if this is your first time checking out the show, we greatly appreciate it. Why don't you go ahead and give us a follow as well? And if you have the ability to share, rate, and review our podcast, please do so. It greatly helps us out with the podcast algorithm. Well, we're at mid-February, and I hope you guys had a wonderful Valentine's Day and that you got your heart all full of love and you whatever. I really hope you're just not snowed in. I know most of the country is definitely under some snow. Myself, not included, I am in Florida, and it's been about 70 degrees. Today's guest, Chase, from Gate Creeper, he also has kind of been able to dodge some of the poor weather. But unfortunately, Alex, he's definitely feeling cold up there in the northwest, or northeast. And speaking of Alex, make sure you visit lambgoat.com for everything hardcore and metal related, and so we can get some of that banner ad money. Stay up to date and follow us on social media, like Lambgoat on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Lambgoat. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube page where you can watch all these interviews in video format, and hit that alert bell so you can always get Lambgoat content. And if you want to get at me directly, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Lurk City. Why don't you share me a cool Limp Bizkit meme or something? All right, now that we have that all out of the way, as I have previously stated in this intro already, today's guest is Chase, the vocalist of Gate Creeper. You can check out their latest EP that they just dropped earlier this year called An Unexpected Reality. You can stream that thing everywhere, or you can buy it through their website. They also have a live stream going on tomorrow, February the 18th. Check out gatecreeper.com for more info on that.
Oh yeah, what's this? I feel this. Oh yeah, this is oh no, come on. Oh no, no, no! Lamb Goat presents the Van Flip Podcast.
Welcome to the show / podcast, Chase Mason, vocalist of Gate Creeper.
What's up? What's up?
That was probably my most awkward intro I've done so far. By far. I was trying a new thing.
You can edit it later. No, I'm just kidding.
That didn't work.
It's not worthy of editing. What's going on, Chase?
Welcome to the show.
I'm just chilling. Thanks for having me.
How you been holding up out there in the Midwest this entire time? Because it's been like officially a year since shows or anything fun has been going on.
I mean, it's been pretty boring, I guess. I did a little bit of traveling last year, and I somehow never got COVID. But then this year, at the beginning of the year, I wasn't doing anything. I barely left my house, and I got COVID last month.
Tight.
So that was fun. Yeah.
Alex, you survived, obviously.
I did. I think I had a pretty mild case of it, so I'm pretty lucky.
I have yet to encounter.
Yeah, your Arizona brethren, I guess. Dude from Tool, Maynard. Does he live in Arizona now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he lives in Jerome.
I guess he got it twice, and I thought I read something about some significant lung damage that he suffered. I don't know how that all impacted him. Long term, but I guess that to me, that's sort of the scariest thing with COVID. You don't know what's going to happen. You read stories about people who think they recovered and then like 2 days later, they just die for whatever freaking reason.
Yeah. It's pretty scary. And in Arizona in particular, like we've been back and forth. I think maybe Florida has beat us at certain points of time, but like the worst places, not only in the country, but like in the whole world. I think at one point I saw a statistic that like 1 in 5 people in Arizona had it or something like that. Something crazy.
Damn.
Interesting.
Well, I was watching that John Oliver show. I can't remember the name of it exactly. But they were like, there was a segment where they were pretty much like shitting all over Arizona, politically speaking. I'll wager a guess that you're not aligned with the ultra right wing, establishment there.
No.
Do you feel like it is like a right wing kind of place, or are you in a progressive area?
I mean, I guess I live in a progressive or more liberal bubble as far as like socially. But as a whole, I think the state is definitely conservative, and I think religious, and I think at some things are like kind of like the wild, wild west out here, you know, like with guns and all kinds of shit, you know, and now with the COVID stuff, like I think we were one of the first states to, one of the last to actually shut down, and the first or one of the first to open back up. So I think that our government got a lot of flack for that. So rightfully yeah. So. But yeah, I would say it's like a conservative place for the most part.
Yeah, that makes sense. You guys, is like Martin Luther King Jr. Day like still not a thing there?
I think we celebrate all those holidays.
Okay.
Or observe them.
Or maybe
whatever you call it.
Maybe that was like a 90s thing. You do daylight savings time? I don't know shit about Arizona.
See, that we don't do daylight savings time.
Okay.
I always wonder how that affects everybody outside. Like, how is that referenced to you outside of your state? Like, I've always wondered how that.
It's just like, we kind of fluctuate in between time zones, I guess. Like right now we're only 2 hours behind East Coast time. But sometimes I guess it's whenever daylight savings happens, we'll be 3 hours behind, or maybe the other way around. But so sometimes we're on West Coast time. Like sometimes we're on the same time zone as California, but right now we're an hour ahead of them. So I honestly don't know I don't understand it either. Luckily I could just look at my phone and it tells me.
I was
going to
say, does your phone automatically switch
the
time depending on what time zone you're supposed to be on?
It does.
If this were the '80s, man, that would really suck having to change your clock so frequently. And I don't change the clock in my car, so like half the year it's an hour off.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's the opposite. Like we don't have to change it ever. So
Yeah, that's
it makes sense.
Well,
in the long
there's
run.
A benefit to everything, I suppose.
Yeah.
In any case, so what was do you remember the date, like the actual date of your last show? Gate Creeper show?
The last Gate Creeper show was the Decibel Beer and Metal Festival. The LA version. And I think that was in December of 2019.
Oh wow,
so it's been over a year.
You didn't get to
I never know what answer I'm gonna get. Like someone would be like March 15th, 2018 as tears come down the cheek, but
it was kind of a long time though. Yeah, and it was fucked up because we were supposed to do the Decibel tour in 2020, and it was like Mayhem, Abath, Us, and Idle Hands, and that tour got canceled 2 days before it was supposed to start. It was starting in the middle of March, and that's like right when everything started going down. So it got canceled literally right before it was supposed to start.
So how badly, you know, not being a musician, I mean, I could imagine, but how badly does that screw you? I mean, I assume you had like a ton of merch printed, and then what, you try and sell it online, or do you just like hold it for the next tour and hope that that next tour happens sooner rather than later?
Both. Like we definitely, since it was so close, like we were literally packed up and ready to go because the first show was in Denver. We were going to take like 2 days to drive there. So we were packed up and ready to go when we were told that like the tour is just canceled. So we had all the merch. We sold a lot of it online. Thankfully a lot of people bought it. But like records and CDs and stuff, like I didn't want to have to mail those out. So I just have a bunch of those sitting around. But yeah, even we had a shirt that had like the tour dates on it. And I was afraid that people, you know, I'm like, oh, these are useless now, but people actually wanted to buy those ones.
Oh yeah. There's going to be more rare later on.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. And, you haven't played a show, but you have a live stream show on Friday.
Yeah.
Am I crazy?
Yep.
Which is going
to
be tomorrow,
I don't have any interns to do research for me. So, how much preparation have you guys done for that? Are you guys going to wing it, or have you been like rehearsing? So it's just going to be this perfect production.
Well, you know, I was kind of resistant to doing a live stream for a long time just because, you know, it's not going to ever replace a live show. And it took a year of not being able to play shows where, and seeing, some cool, like successful, live streams that I saw. And I was like, all right, maybe it's time to do that. Who knows, you know, things keep getting pushed back. So I kind of came around to the live stream idea. But we put a lot of work into it. It's a little bit of a pain in the ass, or just more involved logistically, because we all don't live in the same city. Like two of the guys live in Tucson, which is like 2 hours away from Phoenix. And then our new guitar player lives in Texas. So it's a little bit harder to get together and to get things ready than just, you know, if we were all lived in the same city. But we've definitely been working on it, and
This is a multi-camera thing.
Yeah.
Are you going to be in the same room?
Like a whole video crew.
Yeah.
All right.
What was that?
Are you going to be in the same room, or are you going to be all recording from your various locations?
Oh, no. We're all in the same room.
No, you got to do the same room, man. So yeah. Out of curiosity, some of the ones you said you saw a couple that, you know, were pretty cool. Any come to mind in particular? Live streams I'm talking about.
Yeah, the Full of Hell Nothing one was really cool.
Okay.
I know Code Orange was doing a bunch and doing some different stuff with it. And I watched the Down one. I thought it was really cool because it had, at the beginning, it had like a 20 or 30 minute kind of like documentary at the beginning. And I thought that was cool because that was something that we were trying to do, like incorporate almost like the Pantera Vulgar videos, you know, of us, like just stuff of us just fucking around,
right.
You know, to mix it up, or, you know, have before we do the live stream, or in between have it cut in and out. So, we've been playing around with doing stuff like that.
Are you guys going to be playing live, or is it gonna be pre-recorded? So live. Okay, cool.
Well, we recorded it. We at this venue here, we recorded it, we played live and we recorded it. But at the time, you know, it's like, we're not playing live at the time that it's being live streamed, but it was all recorded live.
I didn't know if it was going to be like somewhat interactive while playing, you know, cause I don't know if you'll have like a chat or something like that on your stream. So
I don't think so. I know some bands have been doing it like on Twitch, but I think for the most part, as far as I understand, like most of the bands that are doing live stream, if not all, it's like it's pre-recorded in some way. Because I think that it would kind of be a logistical nightmare to try to actually live stream it and make it as high quality as you wanted it to be.
Right.
Yeah, a lot can go awry.
Unless you're like in a CBS studio.
Big One was live. But I could be wrong about that.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I guess the bigger bands, I obviously, that's probably not a huge deal for them, but the peons like us, although you did just sign a Nuclear Blast, so you're
congratulations
on your way up, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Congrats on that.
Thank you.
I was a Relapse. You released two albums with Relapse, right?
Yeah, two full lengths that we did, two splits on Relapse as well, like kind of in between records.
Okay. I felt like Relapse wouldn't do anything less than a 3-album contract. And I was a little surprised that before that third Relapse LP came out that you guys had signed a Nuclear Blast, but I don't hang out in a lot of rooms when these contracts are being signed. So maybe my perspective is outdated at this point.
It was just two.
Was there a bidding war, because it makes it sound like you're Maroon 5, but were there a couple labels like vying for Gatekeeper, or are you guys a Nuclear Blast sort of the you were converging for a while for this, you know, at this deal?
I mean, there was a lot of people or labels interested, I would say. And you know, it's like you said, you know, like people assume, you know, they're maybe we would been under contract for a lot longer, and we definitely weren't putting it out there like, hey, we're free agents or whatever. So, But there was definitely, you know, people that were interested and people that I met over the years that we had conversations with. And also it was kind of a weird time, especially when COVID hit. Like that was during the time that I probably would have done a lot more of like actually meeting with people. But Nuclear Blast had kind of came in the picture because I had met Monty Connor. I think when we were on tour with like Paul Bear or something like that, who had recently signed to Nuclear Blast, I met him at the show in New York, and we'd kind of kept in contact from then.
Yeah, that dude's been doing it a long time.
Yeah.
So you guys signed to Nuclear Blast before the surprise EP came out, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we did.
Okay. And they were just like, cool, go release that with Closed Casket or whoever. They didn't try and say, hey, let's, you know, hold off on that and make it the Nuclear Blast debut.
Because we already had, by the time we actually signed, you know, we had already, that record was already recorded and finished. And even before we actually signed, but when we just started talking with them, they knew that we were doing that. And Justin that runs Closed Casket, he is like, he works with Nuclear Blast. Like they have a working relationship. So it wasn't like just some random stranger that they were allowing us to do this with. They already knew. So everybody was kind of on the same page, but it was, we definitely had to carve that out and make sure that in writing and everything was like, that we're doing this, you know, like, so that it didn't, there wasn't any issues later on.
And the whole surprise thing, how much of a, you know, discussion was that regarding, okay, do we do promotion beforehand? Are we killing sales by doing it this way? I'm always curious because it seems like, I mean, it's the surprise thing's cool for fans like, hey, my favorite band just released a new album. But by the same token, for the band, it seems like it could be, you know, a little, I don't want to say damaging, but loss of something. Like you read, you know, like when Avenged Sevenfold, and again, I'm talking a much bigger band, but they surprise released their album. They said, I thought I read something effect like, we're not going to do that again because it just, you know, we killed our sales. And obviously Gate Creepers on a, you know, smaller scale. So maybe, you know, it's not as, the ramifications aren't as severe, but I mean, how much of a discussion is that? Or do you guys even care? You're just like, no, let's just release it. Surprise. That's cool.
No, it was definitely a surprise, and it was our idea to do it that way for a couple different reasons. Number one, you know, the record was a little bit different as far as our styles, and we didn't want it to do like a rollout and put out one of the songs and people be like, oh, is this what Gate Creepers changing their sound, you know? And also there's 8 really short songs and there's 1 really long song. So either one of those we could have chose would have been a weird song to just release one at a time. And we wanted people to, you know, listen to it as a whole. And also it's just like with everything going on in the world, it's hard to keep people's attention. And I feel like that 3-month long rollout process was just right now, not something that would really make sense. So there's a whole lot that went into doing the surprise, and it was a risk, but it paid off. Like it did really well. And I think, you know,
saw some of the sales numbers, pretty impressive.
Yeah, it did really well. And, you know, we're not the first band to do that. People did have referenced the Avenged Sevenfold one because that kind of like flopped. But I mean, I feel like I'm not a Avenged Sevenfold fan. I don't follow them, but I feel like they did that after they were already like kind of in their prime anyway.
They were
way,
already.
Way past.
Yeah. So it's like, it's hard to gauge that off of. And it's, you know, it might be a new thing that for like rock and metal bands to do it that way, because I think we're labels and just everybody in general is kind of stuck in like the traditional way of how everybody's been doing it. But like rap and pop, you know, they do surprise releases all the time. Granted That's that true. They're not actually putting out a physical product most of the time. Like they're not putting out vinyl and CDs. It's just digital. So it makes it a little bit more complicated, but you know, like it was a risk and it paid off. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see a lot more releases like that coming out.
I think it actually works better for
I think it works better for smaller bands.
I hate those rollouts that drag on, you know, like we're six singles into the album and it's still not out yet. It's like that. Maybe I just get sick of posting about Song From Here, so I have my unique little perspective, but it just seems to really be prolonged at times. So I'm cool with it. Although I guess, you know, it wasn't 100% of a surprise because of the, you got to put an ad on the back of Decibel. I mean, beforehand,
it didn't have any information. It didn't have any information, though.
That's true. That
was on purpose.
Yeah, and that obviously gets people talking. But people knew something was in the works. But clearly it all worked out for you guys, so that's awesome.
Yeah. I agree. I think that the rollout, the 3 months, like it can seem, even pre-pandemic, it seems like it could drag on a little bit more. Like you see, like, man, I've seen this record be posted about for 6 weeks and the record's still not even out yet. You know, like I'm already over it and the record's not even out yet. And we've done that before, you know, like the two records we did on Relapse, they did that. And I'm sure that when we do our first record on Nuclear Blast, we're going to be doing
that's
that.
That's right.
Yep. So I'm not going to talk too much shit about that, doing it on Closed Casket and doing it on a label who Justin, who runs it, is a good friend of mine, and he let us have full, you know, control or whatever. And I could be super hands-on, so we were able to like do something a little bit different. And you know, I'm glad with how it all worked out. And it's not like we can tour on that record anyway. So there were so many different circumstances that made it seem like a surprise would be a cool thing to do.
Did you guys write it during the pandemic? And then you elaborated a little bit on like how different it is. And one of the things I wanted to kind of talk to you about was, you know, the 2019 release seemed like it was more of I don't want to call it like a full album, because I mean it was a full album, but the EP that you just released, like you mentioned, had a bunch of shorter songs, and then the eighth song is, you know, pretty long. Like, what thought process went into that? You know what I mean? And was it written in the pandemic time frame?
Yeah. It was written in the pandemic. You know, it's written and recorded. Because the whole thing was, I look at it kind of like a project where we wanted to do something different and kind of explore different, you know, the different sides of stuff that we had already played with in Gatecreeper. So one was being fast and going faster than we've ever gone. And then one was being slow and going slower and longer than we've ever gone, like the two sides of the record. So that idea for the project was something that I've had for a year or two. But you know, we had just put out Deserted, and also we had about, you know, like a year or two worth of touring planned out. So it was kind of put on the back burner of like, this would be a cool thing to do when we have time, you know, when we have some downtime. And so when the tours got canceled, it's like, we have downtime now, let's just do it. So we started writing. We had started writing a little bit before that. But again, it was kind of like a farther off in the future situation. So once everything got canceled, we're like, all right, let's do this. So we finished writing and then we recorded it in July. Answer your other question. It is different and it's purposely undifferent. And it's not necessarily indicative of like a huge style change for Gatecreeper. It was more kind of like an exploration and also putting kind of a new rules or a removal of certain restrictions on what we usually do that like at least fueled me creatively to make a new record. So
I will say, once you push play on it, just like from the get go, you just get punched right in the face. That was one thing I noticed right off rip. So
yeah.
That's the way it should be, damn it.
That's the idea.
Yeah. It kind of like doesn't hold, let up for a while. Not that that's bad, but you know what I mean? Just kind of, it goes real nice.
Yeah. Cool. I'm glad you liked it.
When did you start, growing the stash out? That was something that they wanted us to ask about. So much power is derived from the stash, you know?
I think it was in, 2017. So coming up on 4 years, I guess.
And what was and the story?
I have a mustache story.
Mustache story.
So when we were first started, like, I would say in 2016 is when we first started, like, really touring. We had done a couple before, but it was like our first package tours that we were doing and like support tours. And every tour, my upper lip would get like rubbed by the microphone. And then I would get like, cause then I would, you know, I would shave normally like every 2 days or whatever. And I would start getting kind of like ingrown hairs or just sort of like a rash on my lip of just the microphone, just rubbing on it. And then I grew a mustache and it never happened again.
Yeah. That answers the question as to, I was going to ask you, like, why just the mustache? And cause you seem like, you know, you could grow a nice full beard too with the mustache mm-hmm. coming in as great as it does. So, it's nice. It's a bold choice.
Build in mic guard. You don't need a pop filter in the studio.
There you go. Yeah.
Perfect.
I mean, I actually grew a full beard last year during quarantine. So when our last record was written and recorded, I had a full beard. I don't know if you could hear it or not, but
no wonder it's different, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That was the reason why. But I don't like a full beard. It's too itchy.
Too itchy. I don't like a long mustache. I keep my mustache very, very short.
Yeah, you got a nice one. You got a nice, you know, you trim it up, you can tell.
Thank you. I too also had a long beard one time. You know, I was a Duck Dynasty fellow for a little while. Not that I was in that show, but visually I was long bearded.
So how long are we going to have to wait for that Nuclear Blast debut, you think? Is this like going to be 3 years before the next record?
We'll see. I don't know, man. Like we're already starting to work on it, at least like kicking ideas around and stuff. I usually like to take my sweet time and tinkering with stuff and getting everything perfect. And also there's the element that right now, basically we're sitting on two records that we haven't toured on. You know, we did one tour on Deserted, cause it came out October, 2019. We did one tour in the fall of 2019. So if you think about it, like we pretty much have two full records that we haven't toured or like played live on. And so I'm definitely not trying to add a third record onto that before we can tour again. But who knows what's going to happen. So, I mean, I could tell you with almost certainty that it's not going to happen this year. But
makes sense.
I don't know. It just depends.
Guys are going to have a lot of songs to practice, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So do you have a day job or anything, or are you just all Gate Creeper all the time?
Not anymore. I had a job or jobs or whatever until about like 2016 when we started touring, when we put out our first full length and started touring a bunch. And then I've been doing music full time. I have a couple other things that I do. Like I do graphic design. I had some stores that I ran with a friend, like as a screen printer, and just kind of like different hustles, I guess you'd call it. But Gate Creeper and music is my main thing, and it has been for a couple of years now.
Cool. What kind of graphic design did you like do? Anything specific, or just like scene based things, like for friends and bands, or?
Yeah, I started doing it just for my own band. If you see here, I have a Xerox machine in my.
Notice that.
So I do a lot of stuff. Like I do a lot of our own graphic design stuff and give it that like old zine looking vibe for it.
And, where's the fax machine?
I think it has a fax on there. I haven't used it.
Nobody knows how to fax.
But I kind of figured out and I you know, honed in on this specific vibe for graphic design specifically for our band. And then other bands and friends started hitting me up to do stuff like Full Fell. And so I started doing shirt designs and stuff for other bands. And then I would done like a couple record layouts, but I'm pretty minimal and it's pretty narrow of the stuff that I can do or that I like to do. So I'm not getting like some crazy commercial design jobs. But
not working on the new Coca-Cola logo right now.
No. Right. And I eventually had to, I kind of scaled back doing things for other bands and just focusing on our stuff. And also in Arizona and Phoenix, like I book shows, or I did. So I would always make my own flyers and stuff like that. So
yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Somebody's got to do it, and you save a little money and have more control, and just makes you more autonomous, which is cool.
Yeah. What kind of medium are you using? Are you using like laptop, desktop, or iPad, or drawing tablet?
So I'm not really an illustrator. So a lot of the stuff that I do is like I start it on the computer of like a collage of some sort, you know, like find something from like an old book or like an old movie poster or something, and make some sort of Frankenstein monster on my in Photoshop, and then I'll print it out, and then I run it through the Xerox machine a bunch of times. Like I'll make a copy, and then I'll take that copy and copy that copy like a bunch of times until it looks, you know, beautifully fucked up. And then and then I scan it back in, and I'll do some other things. So a lot of this stuff that you see, I commission a lot of stuff for Gatecreeper, a lot of our shirt designs, but like if you see like the live stream flyers or anything, a lot of flyers or promotional stuff for Gatecreeper, that's all stuff that I did.
How long you been doing that? How long you been messing with graphic design?
I mean, I probably started when I was way younger, when I was a kid, like in the early 2000s. You know, I got into like making GeoCities and Angel Fire websites.
I think that's all three HTML. Of us. I think that's all three of us right now.
You know, like AOL Instant Messenger days, and you know, whatever we were fucking around with pre MySpace or whatever it was, I think that I had some sort of program that was like a bootleg, like a budget version of Photoshop. And I started messing around with that. And then I kind of fell off, and I didn't really have anything to make art for, like, cause I'm not really making art just for art's sake. It has like a function for it. So I think once Gatecreeper started up and I actually had something, you know, to make art for or do designs for, and then I picked it back up.
Are you self-taught the entire time, or have you like looked up?
I mean, I have a couple friends that I collaborate with, I guess, like that are actually art school educated. Like I have a friend now named Colin that me and him, like, we did the layout for the new record, not the painting on the front, but the rest of it, and a lot of graphic or like flyers for Gatecreeper, since he has the you know, technological know-how, and I'm just like a caveman with a Xerox machine. I tap into him like, hey, how do you do this? Or he'll just send me a PSD file, and I'll be like, oh, I could have saved a lot of time doing it that way. But
yeah,
how much ink you running through on that machine there, man?
It's like it comes in like a drum. It's like a huge thing like this, and it's like a powder.
Oh,
so they last a long time. They'll last a couple of years.
Is it just black and white?
You got to pay like $500 for it.
Not really. It's not really that expensive. And like the Xerox machines, like this is the second one that I had, because I broke the first one I had moving. But you can find them on Craigslist for like a couple $100.
Is it just black
and white? The printer or the ink?
The whole printer.
Really?
Yeah.
That looks expensive from here, but
I mean, it was probably expensive in 1994.
So. All right, well, you're only, you know, 25 years behind.
I shouldn't be giving out all my secrets.
I know.
I'm writing all this down, man. Photocopy four times.
That's when he made fun of the 94. I was like, well, that would be like when zines are photocopy exactly. And shit. So yeah, that makes sense.
Well, that's the good whole time. Thing with that like look of stuff. It's like you can make things look Xeroxed or pretty close to that if you're looking for that look in Photoshop. Like you never have to leave your computer, but if you really want to make it, like if you really want to do it the right way, you got to use the Xerox machine. Like you can't fake the funk, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, you're not a Xerox poser for sure. Proof's right there. Well, that's interesting. I never really even thought of doing it that way. I never heard. I mean, I'm not like up in the art scene or technique thing. I didn't know how to use Photoshop, but only, you know, for web crap. But that's interesting. I never really heard of the whole mutation via Xerox kind of process.
And you've never thought of doing it for like yourself, like, because you mentioned earlier you didn't have anything to make art for, so you don't, do you not think of making like a, I don't want to say like an Etsy shop, but like a shop where you would sell like prints or something like that, like, you know, digital art prints, because
Bedazzled Jean Jackets.
I'm coming around to the idea that graphic design could also be like printed and, you know, hung and stuff. So
it's like a gray area for that sort of stuff, because it just, like, I guess the medium or the references or, you know, the pieces that I use for stuff, since I'm not an illustrator, it's not like I'm drawing something completely new. Like, if I'm making a flyer, I think it's perfectly fine to, like, take a piece from like an old movie poster or something else, you know, and turning it into my own. But if I was like selling something, or that's why I also like don't do our own album, or I try not to do album covers, but I think for flyers, it's a little bit different, and for other things. But I think that also on the same page of, if I was to sell something that had like, it was a flyer that had other bands on it, like, I don't know, I would just feel weird about selling something like that, you know?
I meant like creating original artwork that necessarily wasn't band oriented, but, you know.
Yeah.
But so you would feel awkward about like some copyright infringement / like IP stealing, if you like even like, because like you said, it's a fine line, and I don't know what legal would say about that, but. You know.
Yeah. Well, that stuff is a fine line, and it is a gray area, because there's like fair use, you know, and they say there's like you have to change something a certain percent, but like, how do you quantify that? And a lot of the stuff that I do use is like, there's like fair use websites, or, you know, what's it, public domain. So like, I try to use a lot of that stuff, but there's just, I would rather not like fuck around with that. And also like, I would say that I do graphic design, but I'm not one of those people that I want to be like, oh, I'm an artist, you know, I'm a graphic artist. Like, I do it specifically because there's a function for it. So
there's a need, and you don't want to outsource it.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, do you have any like go-to? You said movie posters a couple times. Do you have like things you specifically go to? Like, I'm going to 30s Italian art.
You're
going to
have him reveal all of the secrets.
Yeah.
Well, without giving too much away.
Well, I definitely, over the years, just like find, there's like all kinds of crazy blogs that have a bunch of archives and stuff like that. Or like, I remember when Tumblr was a thing, there would always be some cool shit on there. Just online, just a bunch of stuff. And then I have I'll go to like book fairs, or just weird like used bookstores, and look for just some stuff that looks
You're basically
cool.
Out there searching for inspiration.
Yeah. And then making it like, I mean, I think collaging is a valid, you know, form of art. So that's basically what I'm doing.
Interesting.
Yeah. You stuff could definitely,
I don't think about enough.
I don't know. You could definitely like, I hate saying Etsy store, but some kind of store. You know, I feel.
Yeah.
Cause some of
that
stuff
I used to have a store, with my friend who's a screen printer, and we would make, I guess you would call them bootleg shirts. Like I would, we had a store that we'd make rap shirts. So I made like Big L shirt, UGK shirt. We made a 3-6 Mafia shirt, and I got a cease and desist for it. But I was designing, they were like original designs because it started because I just wanted shirts for like some rapper or something that they don't really make merch, or it's not cool for the most part. So I was like, I'm just going to start making my own.
Make your own.
And then we started selling them. But it's a gray area. So it's also a weird thing for me. You know, like I'm not trying to get jammed up in any sort of situation. So, and I mean, cause there's like a whole, I don't know if you guys are interested in that sort of thing, but like, I really like band shirts. And there's a whole like world of bootleg band shirts.
Oh yeah, and, for sure. I'm on Depop.
Yeah, so like that's a huge thing, and I think it's even blown up in the past couple of years with people. It's very DIY. It's like, oh, I can make this, I can design this, and then, you know, have my friend screen print it or whatever. So I was definitely kind of in that game for a while, but there's a lot of things that I used to do that now with just the band doing a lot more, I've just had to kind of, you know, slim down on other activities that I'm doing. And also out of necessity, like there's not, I was doing that to supplement, being in a band full time so that I could just make a living off of it. But that, you know, desperation or whatever is a bit lessened over the years. So I don't know. Artistically, it's fun, but also it's a gray area that I'm also being a musician. And like, if you're a musician, then you're bootlegging shirts of other musicians. Like, I'm not trying to have someone get mad at me for that. Right. So
but you'll have sympathy for the, you know, the 19-year-old arrested in Iowa for bootlegging Gate Creeper shirts.
Yeah. I've seen some of that stuff, and I'm like, I'm not. There's like on eBay or something, you know, like some patch. And I'm like, I'm not mad that this is being bootlegged, but I'm mad that it looks like shit.
As you should
That's
be.
What I'm mad
As
at.
Should be.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be galling. It's like, dude, you're going to make something custom, make it nice.
Yeah.
You're just sullying our brand with that shit.
Yeah.
So you like rap, then I would assume if you're making bootleg rap shirts, what are some of your favorites, and is it a current? Do you like current hip hop rap, or is it only like throwbacks?
It's changed. Like when I was younger and I was into, like, you know, when I was getting into skateboarding and like punk at the time, I think that skateboarding and like old like New York hip hop sort of stuff went hand in hand, you know, like Wu-Tang, Nas, like West Coast, like Hieroglyphics, Souls of Mischief, whatever they call like golden age hip hop. So I really like that sort of stuff, and any of the Wu-Tang related, like Raekwon and shit. And then somewhere down the line, I got more into like the Southern rap stuff. So yeah, that's more of the vibe that I'm into now, like 3-6 Mafia and that, any of the 3-6 related stuff, like UGK.
Yeah, it's more like 8-Ball. When I grew up.
Yeah, like 8-Ball, MJG, like Scarface, all that shit. That's more my speed now.
Yeah, I'm all about Soulja Boy. I'm making Soulja Boy shirts back here.
But there's not a whole lot of modern stuff that I'm. I know I have a lot of friends that have tried to get me into like, what's that, Griselda, a lot of the Griselda stuff, but I haven't really gotten into it. I do like some SoundCloud rap though. I will say that, but that's not even really rap.
Like when you say like SoundCloud rap, you're talking about like just the new hip hop that comes
No,
out?
I'm like, talking about like Lil Peep.
Okay. Yeah. That not
I like
Lil
Peep.
Not like Trailer Park. I call it like Trailer Park rap, like Suicide Boys and Puya.
Oh
and
yeah. Stuff. See, that Suicide Boys, it's like, I mean, I would rather just listen to 3-6 Mafia. But I don't know. I'm always looking for new music, and if there's something new, I'll check it out. So I don't want to shit on anything. So, but most of the, as far as rap stuff is older that I'm into.
What's a genre that a casual Gate Creeper fan would be surprised Chase listens to?
I guess if it's they're casual, I love like emo or like early 2000s emo stuff. I talk about that all the time. So if someone follows me on like social media, they'll know that. But Jimmy Eat World is from my hometown, Mesa, Arizona. They went to my high school. I mean, they're older than me. So Jimmy Eat World and all that stuff. And like, I don't know. I can name off. I think when you say the word emo, people
you definitely have to automatically. Clarify.
Yeah, they're terrified automatically. And but I think people now will automatically think that you're talking about like My Chemical Romance or like Fall Out Boy.
I
knew
you were gonna say that. Yeah,
but that's not what I'm talking about. You know, like that stuff. It is what it is. But I don't know.
You have the same problem with screamo. You know.
Yeah. But in the early 2000s, especially because Jimmy World was like popping off and they were from here, that was the thing. Like if you played in like a high school band, you probably wanted to be Jimmy World, and there was house shows and they were all like emo bands. So it's a dirty word, and I understand that. But I love that shit. No shame.
No shame in that.
No.
So do you enjoy going to the
Well, you
DJ
didn't say
emo
polka.
Nights?
I was hoping you were going to say polka, but
I didn't name any other names, but I'll say Get Up Kids is another good one too. Sunny Day Real Estate.
Yeah, that's
their names.
When I hear emo, those are the bands I think of. And when people on Twitter love to call everything emo, obviously.
But. Yeah, it's totally changed, you know, like, especially now with emo nights. Yeah. Like, I would never go to one of those. Like, that sounds like a hellscape. That's like the last place I would ever want to go to. But the name or tag emo is like completely changed from, I guess, that just like dates myself. And I'm an old man now. If I'm like, no, not that's not real emo. And also, that's kind
of my. Yeah, we have that problem with all these genres, whether it's metalcore or, as I said, screamo. It's just, you know, it's always something different to the older people, the newer people. And it's like you open that door, starting to argue about what is or what isn't. It just never ends well. So, like, yeah. Now I'm just at the point, well, whatever. You know, actually, you want to call freaking Nickelback metalcore. Go
actually, one of the things I think that you, not maybe you didn't say, Chase, but it was on like an interview you did a couple years ago with the guy from Nails. You guys were talking about how like small communities, you know, hardcore kids went to the metal shows and, you know, they went to all the shows. And
yeah,
that kind of makes me think like how I just categorize scene music. Because I also went to all the shows too. So like, to me, like, even though metalcore, metal, emo and all that stuff, blah, 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 all those genres, it's all like scene music to me. And I just categorize it as such. So
yeah. Well, there's broad, a specific, but, like, I feel like it's the, after a while, there's this very specific, like when you say scene, I think of like the Warped Tour, like boy band, metalcore bands and like V-neck shirts and like Toms. So
I know I'm going to piss people off, but I mean, like, I'm going to piss some people off, but like the hardcore scene, that's what I kind of refer to it as, like everything under the umbrella is the hardcore scene. Cause it kind of, all, I don't know. I don't want to say it all derived from the hardcore scene, but you know.
Yeah. I associate the word scene, if you're talking about like scene metal or like scene music,
tight pants.
I associate that with like the MySpace era, yeah. You know, like Neon, whatever, Attack or some shit.
Attack.
Yeah.
You say the word Neon and I'm thinking Attack.
Yeah.
Crabcore.
Yeah. Ugh. One of the things we're talking about, like goofy, like associations with, and how people, you know, we're in metal, like it's such a nerdy thing where we're like, no, that's not black death metal. That's, you know, or it's death metal with melodic black metal elements or whatever, you know, like, and someone, I've seen people called Gatecreeper deathcore and, but it's really, I think that they're trying to say it's like death metal with like a hardcore influence. Hardcore. But if you say deathcore, I'm like, we're not a deathcore band.
No.
Like,
right. Because you're just picturing dudes in tight black shirts with gauges. Yeah. And I mean, I have that. Obviously, I, you know, all these articles, all these stupid, well, some are stupid, some are amazing. But these posts, I, but it's like I put a lot of thought, or I decide not to put thought in like genres, because I always feel like I'm just going to get, you know, bad feedback. Do I call this band metalcore? Do I put metal/hardcore? Do I call it metallic hardcore? Because as you said, like certain genres, they have all this baggage. And while the sound may, you know, be sort of faithful to the genre by name, the scene and the accoutrements of that genre, they don't match up. So it's like a big freaking hassle to even, sometimes I'm just like, no, I'm not going to put a genre because it's just, there's no way I'm going to get this right. And then other times I'll put like 4 slashes, you know, hardcore /death metal/thrash/crossover. It's like, oh, I hate the genre shit. But I mean, it all makes sense. What do you tell Aunt Marjorie at your grandmother's Christmas dinner when she says, what kind of music does your band play, Chase?
I just say a metal band.
Like AC/DC?
Yeah. Van Halen. God, I love that metal.
We kind of have a running joke on tour. Like you're at like a gas station or it's like a toll booth person. They're like, oh, are y'all a band? And you're like, yeah. And they're like, what's your band's name? And we like Mudvayne is one that we say all the time.
Nice.
Or just like make up different band names. And because
Mudvayne's risky, because you got to get some, you know, toll dudes that are like, yeah,
but they don't,
but also,
they have
to be like, before you pick the band.
Yeah, and you can be like, yeah, we just normally wear makeup, but this is what we normally look like.
I wear like a bald Slipknot, cap. I have baby. A bald cap on.
Yeah, that's funny.
We're mushroom head.
I like it.
Yeah, mushroom head.
Yeah, nobody knows what they look like. Fuck it.
You guys like that black metal prank call, the classic YouTube one? Have you ever listened to that?
No,
she's like, yeah, I like that mushroom head.
I've not seen that.
I'll have to send
I'm
it
gonna
to
look it up right after this.
Yeah, I think it's just called
Black Sounds Metal, Promising.
Black Metal Prank Call. I guarantee you both will like it. I don't even know you guys, but you'll probably like it.
Hey, you know, I grew
that's
up on the Jerky Boys.
Black Metal Mushroom Head, that's a winner for me.
Yeah. I love a good prank call with the crank yankers and the Jerky Boys, you know. So
Jerky Boys. Yeah, now we're really dating ourselves.
That was funny shit when you were a teenager.
That was pretty good.
Yeah. And of course, before that was pre-internet, kind of, I guess. We had the CD. Yeah.
Internet ruined everything.
I was actually just thinking about that because I watched Happy Gilmore last night because it was the 25th anniversary of Happy Gilmore. And I was thinking about how me and my friends used to listen to the Adam Sandler comedy album. Do you guys remember that?
I almost bought it because it's
like the goat skit.
I never had it.
Yes, dude. I almost bought it. It's at the bookstore. It's for $2, and it's like pristine condition and on CD. And I was like, dude, the only reason I would buy it, not to listen to it, but is for nostalgia, and because I grew up with that, and me and my friends in middle school would just quote the shit out of that. And
yeah,
that goat skit was just so fucking hilarious.
Yeah,
have fun mosh pitting. I say that shit still.
You say fuck me my goat ass?
No, I say. Have fun mosh pitting, whatever he talks about.
But nobody, like, no younger people like a comedy album. They probably be like, what's that?
Yeah, that's why I was thinking.
I still have a vivid memory of being like 5 years old or something, and my neighbor got a freaking Eddie Murphy comedy album. You know, this is going way back. But put that shit on, and it was like he did this Be Up Your Butt song, which is so stupid, but that's like, that's all we had.
Yeah.
Well, he's funny too.
Oh well.
So do you like comedy then, Chase? You're a comedy guy, or you just were like, you know, it was 25 years ago, tonight's the night. I saw this post on Instagram, he can still whack the ball.
Me yeah, as well. That was pretty much it. I mean, I do like funny movies. You know, people, you know, it might be blasphemy, but like I'm not a huge horror movie guy.
What?
I mean, I know I'm not really like the stereotype.
You can't be a metal, man.
Yeah.
This guy likes emo and doesn't like horror movies. And
yeah, kick
like
me out right now. The people are right. I am a poser.
Chase Mason watches Friends every night.
Yeah. Actually, I'm more of a Seinfeld guy, but yeah.
Good call.
Seinfeld, yeah. I watch that shit over and over again.
I like comedy.
Yeah. Do you like comics or like do you like just comedy like movies and shit?
I mean, I would say movies. I don't watch a whole lot of stand-up comedy. I mean, there's the classic like combos of the, you know, like Chappelle Show. I revisited recently.
Mm-hmm. You state me like you like the older shit more than the new stuff. So like you seem to be the kind of guy that rewatches movies a lot. Like,
yeah.
What are some of your top, if you could off the top of your head, like just go to comedies.
Encino Man, number one.
Okay.
That's my favorite.
You've set a high bar.
Yeah. I mean, I guess not just comedy, but like I would say my favorite movies are Encino Man, Goodfellas, Burn After Reading. That's my top three.
I've not seen Burn After Reading.
You haven't?
It's kind of weird.
That doesn't even ring a bell to me, but
it's got a bunch of big guys in it, like Brad Pitt,
it's a Coen
right?
Brothers movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, all right.
Guys, is it Gwyneth Paltrow in that? Gwyneth Paltrow and Brad Pitt. Is George Clooney?
Yeah, Brad Pitt. George Clooney's in it too.
Yeah, there's a bunch of people.
And
Brad Pitt's
this
weird.
It's a lot of hot dudes.
Weird guy. This weird fitness guy. But
yeah, there's
yeah, I don't know. something.
There's that quote. I can't remember. I feel like there was a band that in the era where bands always had movie samples in their records.
Yeah. Between every song.
My band. That was my band.
One of my favorite samples is from Burn After Reading, where that Brad Pitt character, he's like, I thought you might be worried about the security of your shit.
What album?
I don't know. I can't remember, but I feel like somebody did.
What is your?
Yeah, well, you're probably right.
What's your favorite sample ever used in a song?
That's a tough
one. Or which one stands out other than that one to you? Not like favorite. Which ones stand out to you? Like,
I don't know. I've never been really a fan of it. I remember like that band Graf Warlock, and that was like their whole thing. It was like action movie samples. Stick.
I was like that. If you ever heard of that Kill Whitney Dead band way back in the day,
yeah, I seen
it was
them
like
live
half
before.
Their albums were like, oh really? Half yeah. their albums were like, I feel like they were like samples of shit.
Yeah. Okay. One that sticks out to me. It's not even that old. But the Magruder Grind album, I think it was their self-titled. They had like a Trailer Park Boys sample, and they also had this. Another YouTube video that's one of my favorites, this like cable access preacher named Reverend X, and they sampled that, and I thought it was
old guy. It's like
he just talks shit, and
he's talking like, tongue.
No,
that's the farting preacher guy that I'm thinking of. Never mind.
You had me at cable access preacher. I mean, if there ever there is a winning formula, that's it.
That's like, I mean, that's not even the half of it. Just okay, put it. You got black metal for prank call. And then look up Reverend X after that.
Is this guy had he been in prison at one point and likes to cuss on?
Yes.
He likes to cuss during his
thing?
And
he dances.
Is he maybe like someone who might have lived the street life at some point? I think I might have seen this guy. Yeah, he's hilarious. Yeah. He was that was one of my first like internet videos I found like back in the day. Oh my God, that was
Reverend X.
The internet's made for that shit, but I haven't seen it. I've got some assignments now. Check out.
Oh, dude, he goes hard on the camera.
He goes so hard.
That's a good one.
All right.
One that sticks out to me, the sample, is the Mel Gibson in Signs, There's No One Watching Out for Us. But it's also like one that's right before a breakdown, and I Remembering Never.
Why? What album's that? I like Signs.
Remembering Never.
Women
and Children First.
Do you remember that Bleeding Through album? And it had that, like, I think it was Boondock Saints.
Yeah, that one too. Yeah.
There was a firefight.
Yes, that's a great one.
God,
all I keep hearing is that Scream and the Dillinger Escape self-titled. But I don't know where that, or not self-titled, Calculating Infinity, the debut. I don't know where that Scream came from, though.
Yeah.
It's anytime somebody says sample, I like keep hearing it. That and, you know,
a Wilhelm Scream
opening of 36 Chambers.
I love when you're watching a movie. Well, I guess they have like a meme for it now where it has like, you know, that meme where it has like Leonardo DiCaprio and he's like pointing at the TV. Mm-hmm. But I have those moments where, you know, you're watching a movie and you're like, oh, I know that. This man sampled this.
Yeah. If you do it in reverse order, it's kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
Hey, this movie got this song from Poison. Anyway, well, I want to keep. I feel like this could go on for hours. Now we go down the movie.
We're just
rabbit hole.
Shit.
Yeah, which is what we aim to do here. But we also aim to not keep our guests, you know, up all night and not that the copy machine is quiet and probably needs to be fired up.
It does.
So, Dave, you had anything? Did we miss anything? Not that we had an agenda.
No, not necessarily. I think we're all good.
Gay Creeper live stream. Check it out this weekend.
Yeah, where can you go? Friday. Where can they go see? Where can they go watch this? Is it at the website or?
Yeah, we built our own site for it, so it's gaycreeper.com. Right now, you can buy the tickets for it and some other merch, and then that's where you're going to watch the stream. And then it's live, like it premieres, I guess, on Friday evening, and then throughout the weekend you can like just watch it on demand, I guess.
Cool.
Well everybody go check that out. Otherwise Chase is gonna have to start, you know, making bootleg rap shirts again. It'll probably end up in jail.
Please.
And you won't get a new Gay Creeper out.
Please.
That is all right. Hilarious.
Sweet. All right, well, thanks for having me, guys.
No problem, man.
Thanks so much for coming on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, peace out.
See ya.
Well, hey friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like the Lumineers, Andy DeFranco, Wolfpack, Keb Moe, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask?
I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon. Again.